This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
This episode is brought to you by UiPath. Human achievement can be slow. 200,000 years to go from the wheel to your jalopy? Really? But today, 90% of the Fortune 500 are accelerating human achievement simply. When AI is everywhere, every process can be automated and accelerated. 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 UiPath, the AI everywhere foundation of innovation.
Hello and welcome to John Richardson, the Future Nauts, Series 73, Episode Toast. what is it? Series 4, Episode 4, I'm going to guess?
Yeah.
It feels about right.
All the fours.
There we go. It's the Sickness Special featuring, we don't want to arouse the listener too early, but from his bed, Mark Stevenson.
Just going to sniff. Just gonna
and recently returned from a hospital, Ed Gillespie.
It's a delight to be here.
What a world we live in.
And yet we look at us, though. Our commitment to the Future Nauts knows no limits. We
absolutely
are still at it.
Despite absolutely zero public clamour.
we did get a tweet of someone saying, come on, you know, you're only three episodes in. Where's episode four? It was due. So I rather tartly replied, I said, I'm really sorry, but my daughter's been in hospital all week.
Yeah.
So we've had to miss a recording.
Yeah, you know? Dick.
I think his name
is ultimate slam, isn't it, that one? There's no coming back from that.
No, I think his name is Richard as well. So that.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I mean, but Richard, to be fair to Richard, he is a massive fan, and he's very keen that we get the episodes out. So, you know, I don't think it should slag off our one consistent listener so early
now,
on into the
let's
show.
Get rid. We can stop when we've got none. I mean, you spend the first three series trying to build your listenership to as large as it can be, and then from then on you whittle it back down to zero so you can stop. I mean, this can't go on forever, can it?
Is that what you're doing with Meet Richardson's? The first three series were quite good. Should I not watch the fourth?
No, especially not when you're ill. I don't want to be. It'd be like the opposite of... was it the goodies that somebody had a heart attack from laughter? It'd be like the opposite of that. I'll just put you into a coma.
It's a difficult second album and the impossible fourth series.
Yeah, absolutely. Series 5 coming next year. So where shall we begin? Let's begin with you, Mark. How are you?
Yes.
How are you? What's wrong with you?
Oh, just, you know, the usual, you know, whatever it is that's going around. Well, my children have been sick. My wife's been sick. I went on tour, and therefore with the band, and managed to avoid it, but I've come back and succumbed. So
of course. Picking up. Do you take your own microphone with you on tour?
It did. You have to now because of COVID,
You didn't bring back some sort of prog fan contagion and infect your whole family?
Is? Yeah. I've infected. Yeah, we've all got Atomic Rooster. or something.
Is that the Latin name?
So what are the symptoms of a sort of prog illness? It's going to go on longer than you want it to.
Yeah. Nobody can quite diagnose what it is.
No. Depressingly uninfectious. You keep trying to get other people to get it, but they just don't want it.
Yeah. And it only affects old white men. And the symptoms are generally standing around and nodding your head out of time. To whatever is going on around you.
That is the type of plague we really need.
Yeah.
Maybe it was created in the lab.
Well, it's very prog, that.
You have a tale to tell, I believe, Ed, of your last 7 days.
Oh, yeah. So my poor wee daughter fell ill on Friday night and was running a roaring temperature of, like, you know, 39 plus degrees. So I was very worried. I tucked her into bed and I went downstairs and I sat in the chair and I checked the news, and then of course I saw the strep A story and I was like, oh God. Went back upstairs, you know, took her temperature again, thought, this is not good. Had my sort of iPhone out and was looking underneath her duvet for rashes on her body. And she sort of go, get off me, daddy. I'm trying to get to sleep. And then I thought, right, I'm just going to take her into A&E. So I had like 4 hours in A&E on Friday night. And then she started vomiting. and we came home for the weekend and she was sort of okay, but then was complaining of like serious stomach cramps on Sunday. So we ended up back in A&E again on Sunday. And then she had a really punishingly horrible viral gastroenteritis for about 4 days. So yeah, I've spent the whole week in hospital, but I mean, she's okay now. She sort of bounced back and she's eating again, although she's a little bit feek and weeble. But it's just extraordinary. You know, I guess we all know the kind of pressures the NHS is under at the best of times, let alone, you know, when the weather turns cold and things like that strep A problem emerge. And then, of course, everyone rushes to hospital because they're all justifiably concerned. But it's just, it's transcendent. You know, the care and compassion you get from people who are, you know, overworked, underpaid, largely underappreciated. And, you know, and you see all of humanity in an NHS hospital. I mean, let's face it, it's like it's us and all our diverse glories and flaws. And yeah, I just think my reflection on it having come out was a sort of massive gratitude for all the kind of tender, loving care. But so the biggest gift we can give to the NHS is to bloody look after ourselves better. You know, I mean, use those services for when they're really needed, but you know, the fitter and healthier we keep ourselves, the better it is for everyone.
You've stumbled upon what I guess is, since this series is more instantly topical, the big talking point of the moment, a health scare going around kids that is leading to mass diagnosis of antibiotics as a precaution, which is something we've been sort of warned against previously, and overwhelmed hospitals.
You don't diagnose antibiotics.
What did I say? Prescribe.
Yeah, you said mass diagnosis of antibiotics, which would be like, oh, you've got antibiotics, which would be a weird diagnosis.
Sickness doesn't affect his pedantry, does it?
Yeah, I tell you what, that's impressive. You never lose your touch, do you? That's like an old sort of footballer on the touchline begging for the ball to come down.
I was single for a very long time.
Hey, you might be again. Let's not be so pessimistic. And the hospital's overwhelmed by, as you say, people in beds who are unable to be discharged because hospitals have become sort of care in the community as well, because we don't have the care system, and people coming in there who perhaps could have been best dealt with previously had conditions not worsened by a sort of better care system outside of the hospital. So,
well, and people can't get a GP appointment, so they just go to A&E. You know, so that, you know, the first line of the system is overwhelmed, and so people take up to the second line. And it says, as you say, John, I mean, you know, there's mental health cases, you know, people who are in really disturbed states of mind. I mean, you know, I've been on the children's ward, and it was quite disturbing. And yet you see this sort of incredible stoicism from the staff who are trying to do their best and fulfill the best intentions of the honour of their service. And it's like, it's gobsmacking. It's truly humbling.
But I mean, you know, what we're looking at here is a systemic issue, isn't it? That basically the country is unhealthy to an extraordinary degree. And then when you add on to that sort of a genuine health scare, like COVID or whatever, you've got a massively overwhelmed system because we prioritise the wrong things. We prioritise the wealth of the few against the health of the many. And it's fucking disgraceful and I'm fed up with it.
Yes. Well, what I'm loath to do is ask the same, because every week I say, what questions would you like to ask Mark and Ed? And every week it's the same sort of combination of how do you cope at the moment? And, it was question time last night. And you hear the very specific tales of people on trolleys for 15 hours. And then this sort of baffling moment where it sort of pivots into a conversation about, well, where does the money come from? And as if that's any sort of end to the debate, that, you know, that there are no other sources of money and therefore that means we can't pay people properly to work in our NHS.
And also the whole fucking thing is just ridiculous. It's like, where's the money come from? Well, I'll tell you where the money goes to. It goes to places that it's not needed. Whereas if you looked at the country and the planet from outer space, you go, why are you spending money or giving money and resources over there when all these people are suffering over here? You know, why are you spending 14 billion on diabetes care when you should be spending 14 billion on making sure people don't get in the first place with proper sports facilities and social cohesion? Why do you think so short term? So when you say, where's the money going to come from? Basically, that's the rich people going, well, don't take it from me. Fuck you. If you hadn't had it in the first place, you wouldn't be in this state if we actually had a proper debate about us all living in a prosperous healthy economy, rather than assuming that the only way you get a prosperous, healthy economy is that some rich people get fucking richer and then somehow it trickles down to us. I'm absolutely livid about it. Fuck them.
Yeah, well, we could probably ask Baroness Moan to lend us like 29 yeah. million quid or something like that. You know, that's that money's just been resting in her account in a sort of Father Ted style. You know, maybe we could redeploy it.
Oh, but I, you know, that's the only positive thing I've heard anyone say about this is the idea that if she can generate an iconic sitcom at some point in the next 3 years, then at least some good will come of all this. If she ends up on an island with an alcoholic, then, and I'm willing to volunteer.
Well, yeah. Reminded me, Boris, because, you know, remember, do you remember that prime minister we had? What was his name? Boris Johnson, something like that.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, but I mean, it was this time last year that he was saying, you know, Britain is not remotely a corrupt country. He's like, yes, it is. It blatantly is.
Well, I mean, the thing is, the whole system is corrupt, and it's not necessarily because people are corrupt, but because you've got these archaic systems that just don't work anymore. And if you concentrate too much power in too few hands, you get inefficiency at best and corruption at worst. And that is whether you're in a left-wing leaning country or a right-wing leaning country, concentration of too much power in too few hands, particularly the hands of people who all look the same, you get a fucking shit show. And it's about time we embrace some fucking diversity and some proper systemic constitutional change to run the country as if it was the 21st century and not the fucking 19th.
Bravo. It's very difficult if you've, because obviously I think we are probably the exception. Oh, no, that's not fair. We have a lot of listeners who have listened, not just once, a lot of them, but many times to certain episodes of this podcast. But we have been in everyone. And it's very hard not to see the answers. You know, you've said from the beginning that all issues are linked and all issues are systemic. And you couldn't get a more clear indicator now of a time. You just, every answer to every problem we face has at some point been mentioned by somebody in one episode of our podcast. And to have conversations about how we fund the NHS and then say, well, we've got to get the economy growing. And I was instantly watching Question Time last night, screaming Kate Raworth's name at the screen about, you know, this idea that the great panacea is just economies that all grow infinitely and nobody questions whether that is possible. But there have been, whilst I think there's been a great deal of problem this week, at least clear problem. What I don't like is vague badness that nobody knows how to fight. It's nice now that you can see the problems and there's numbers on them. So we know for a fact, how many penises do you need to eat to be forgiven absolutely any level of cronyism and incompetence? 2 kangaroo penises. That's fine. We know the answer. How far do England need to get in a tournament so that you don't have to worry about human rights anymore? Quarterfinals. That's a fact. That's an answer. How many coal mines does it take to completely undermine what was probably a plastic net zero promise anyway? 1 coal mine. These are facts. These are numbers. We can quote those.
I hate to channel Mark's pedantry, but I think it was actually kangaroo anus and camel penis.
Was it? Do you know, I wonder if I'll get away with saying that. And I thought, these two won't know the difference between a penis and an anus. As long as it's been run through a dishwasher, they're fine. But there has been some positivity. What you were saying there, Mark, about focusing power away from the systems that we use at the moment. Labour made a policy pledge this week about more power spread to the regions, and that's something we've discussed. Do you take any solace from that?
I do take some solace from that. And, you know, I mean, I hate the two-party system, and I think it's ridiculous. I think, short of a miracle, we're definitely going to have a Labour government because, you know, even, you know, the Tory friends of mine, you know, who I would consider like one nation decent Tories, they're just like done with this party. They just see the incompetence. And many of them had people die because of the mismanagement of COVID, and then seeing Matt Hancock go on TV, it's just, they're just absolutely furious. So even if they don't vote Labour, they'll probably abstain or vote Liberal Democrat. So we're almost certainly going to have a Labour government. I think Labour knows that. And I think for the first time, a long time, they're thinking, right, well, let's try and do something a bit more radical. And I think this constitutional reform is something they will be able to do because they'll have, you know, that majority. And I think that's impressive. And I'm pleased about that. And it does give me some hope. I still think the two-party system is fucking ridiculous, but I think maybe they're doing something to perhaps address that. So yes, I am pleased about that. And also, you know, some of the people I work with and the team I work with are in discussions with the Labour front bench about some other quite sensible yet radical changes to taxation and the way we think about governing, which I think we need. I think if a government comes in and doesn't do that, we're going to end up with riots in the streets at this rate because it's just it's just broken down.
Mm. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until
the Singapore presentation is at 3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
I'm really enjoying the idea of a full podcast where whatever question I ask you, at some point you say, but it's all wrong and I'm fucking sick of it. I wonder if there's a question I can ask you where at some point that doesn't come out.
You could ask me about my tour. You haven't asked me about the Quantum Pig tour, which was the big thing in my life.
Well, I've read the review and that's one of the quotes from the review, isn't it?
What?
It's all wrong and I'm fucking sick of it. Go on then. Before I come to Ed on more systemic failure and the collapse of society as we know it, let's talk about, because obviously since we spoke last, you have been out on the road with the band. How was it?
It was absolutely fucking amazing. It was one of the best things I've ever done in my life, and I need to do a lot more of it. And I realised it was really great being a support band because you slot into this amazingly professional touring thing. So you've got an amazing sound man, they've got an amazing lighting guy, you've got a whole thing, you've got an audience provided for you. And if you do well in front of that audience, you pick up a whole bunch of fans. And they just loved us. And we ended up at the Islington Town Hall playing to about 850, 900 people. My favourite venue in London, went down an absolute storm. And I came off stage just feeling like just completely cured of all sadness. It was just an extraordinary moment. And as a result of that, we've been asked to go back out again on a European tour, which is fantastic.
Amazing.
So, yeah. Amazing. Don't you feel like that after every episode of this?
No.
You will after our European tour.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to go out live with the Future Noughts.
It'll just be us in a hotel room in Stockholm on laptops. But, at least we can say we're in Europe.
Well, it'd be like that lovely author who tweeted this week. Did you see that story? She tweeted that I just had my book launch and two people came and I'm feeling a bit flat. And then basically every famous author in the world chipped in with the stories of their own like miserable book launches. To basically cheer up and say, hey, we've all been there, keep at it. But it was really beautiful because, well, we've joked about it on this show, but we've all played to very, very small crowds and tiny audiences, and so it's a great leveler, it's a humbler. But then,
and indeed this week I was meant to be doing a Future Noughts show with Ed Gillespie, and he didn't turn up because his daughter was in hospital, so I had half of the act as well, so I had to do it all by myself, and that was very lonely without you.
Oh, that's very sweet of you to say so.
Yeah, it was better without you, obviously, but it was that.
Careful, yes, the second time you said that in 2 weeks. Careful what you wish for.
Come on, I'm an environmentalist. I can recycle my jokes.
Oh, you're nicking my recycled jokes.
Yeah, I'm recycling your jokes.
That's a proper circular economy of comedy.
There you go.
So we've had some emails in from listeners.
Oh, have we? Oh, how tedious.
Of course we You become like an evil villain. I like it. So Charlie says, I enjoyed hearing the mention of Eastbourne's tagline, breathe it in, on the last show. Even more brilliantly, I believe this was adopted not long after it was revealed that Eastbourne has some of the worst air pollution in the country. There are lots of comedians in Eastbourne, and at least one of them appears to work in destination marketing. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work, Charlie.
Don't get me started on destination marketing. I did a whole gig for like the European conference on destination marketing, where they asked me to like share the insights of comedy into destination marketing. Now, obviously, in Eastbourne, that is clearly either accidental or highly satirical. But yeah, I dug up some brilliant ones for my talk. Guess how Vilnius in Lithuania markets itself?
Oh, I'm trying to think of a pun on Vilnius, but I bet they don't pronounce it Vilnius, do they?
No, the G-spot of Europe. Nobody knows where it is, but when you find it, it's amazing.
I like that.
And that was literally their destination marketing campaign. Although, you know, worse was, you know, that Liam Neeson film?
Yes.
Taken.
Taken.
Taken, yeah, where his daughter is kidnapped by Albanian kidnappers.
Yeah.
Albania had a campaign which is called Be Taken by Albania. and their strapline was, are you ready to be taken? Now, of all of the associations as a kind of destination management team, do you think like playing to some crude national stereotype of your country being criminal kidnappers is a good idea?
Well, I tell you what, you've opened up a can of worm there. So hello at johnonthefuturenauts.com. If you are from or have visited a place with a worse marketing strapline than those, then do get in touch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Kazakhstan actually recruited Borat, you know, and actually had Kazakhstan. Very nice. so, you know, that's obviously playing to the overt humor and like, okay, we might as well embrace this. Yeah, there's all sorts of ones. There was another one that was targeted at Black American tourists, which was just called Go Back to Africa.
And
my favorite one was Amsterdam, though, actually, where they were trying to control bad behavior in the streets of Amsterdam. And basically they had a campaign which said, you know, if you sing in a bar, it's free. If you sing in the street, it costs you €140 fine. So yeah, I think destination marketing, there's some gold out there.
This sounds like a game that should be on I'm sorry, I haven't a clue, which is
it does,
like,
doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. What should be the destination marketing for, you know, said town like Swindon?
Well, John Richardson used to live there.
Yeah, used to live there. He's moved out, so it's free. It's safe to come back.
Even John Richardson fucked off from Swindon.
Well, Norwich, you know, my hometown, its strapline for decades, ever since I was a kid, had just been, welcome to Norwich, a fine city. When I gave my talk in Norwich the other week, I said, well, we all know what fine as an acronym stands for, don't we? It's like fucked up, insecure, neurotic and emotional. That's Norwich.
Was that the WI?
Yeah. No, that was the Norwich Net Zero lot.
You know, in Hastings, they've got an acronym, which is for all the people that are moving down from London, and they call them filth. It's a failed in London, try Hastings.
So not far down the coast from Brighton comes our next email from Adam, who says, thank you for the podcast. It's useful in helping me convince my friends to be less shit. That could be the strap line for this show. Try and convince your friends and family to be less shit. Talk to me then about a world where a good guy is sat watching Question Time and sees a conservative minister tell the world that their new coal mine is climate neutral.
Yeah, Death Star economics. Total Death Star economics. You know how it is climate neutral, how they're managing to wriggle through the legals on this? Is they say that it'll be shut down by 2049, so therefore won't be a problem for the UK meeting its net zero target, which is a legal obligation by 2050. So it's like, it's all fine, we'll just shut it down the year before. And you know, and it is, like, it's Darth Vader saying, you know, the creation of our new Death Star is an amazing job creation opportunity.
I have a nuance on this. And, you know, which is, and this is the problem with quite a lot of climate conversations, we have to go on a transition. And at the moment, the way that we make quite a lot of steel requires this kind of coking coal. And that's because the system works that way. So we should be replacing steel with other materials as well. At the moment in the UK, we're actually importing that coking coal. So not only is it we're using it, but we're also paying the carbon emissions to bring it here. So there is an argument to say, well, as we bring that down, why don't we make it less carbon intensive and provide some jobs? And I can see that argument, but fundamentally, as a social signal, it kind of undermines the whole idea of actually, can we rethink the system? So, you know, it's a difficult decision to make. Do we carry on importing this coking coal, which is highly carbon intensive, or do we make it here, which will make it less carbon intensive and provide some jobs and arguably be part of the transition? There is no right answer to this one, I'm afraid.
Is it not the case that the UK steel industry doesn't want the call for coking because it doesn't, it's not what they need.
I think the general point to make is, like, philosophically, we find ourselves in this system where you can go, is that a decision? That's ridiculous. How does that even work? Then you dig into it and kind of go, well, then nothing's right about this. And so, you know, all of us set with the devil, it's different levels of the spoon. What I certainly understand from dealing with quite a lot of the government is they're looking for excuses to not really deal with climate properly sometimes. And there's certain ministers who really don't understand what the fuck they're talking about. I shall mention no names.
I was speaking with someone this week who listens to the podcast, who said their favourite episode was the Client Earth special with James Thornton, and was asking basically just for a sort of follow-up, just saying, is there any hope that we could get even maybe a voice note from James or someone at Client Earth to find out what they're up to and what they've done in recent months since they were on?
Well, I am an ambassador for Client Earth, and I am sitting down with Brian Eno on Tuesday to talk about all sorts of things, Client Earth and climate related.
Oh, well, perhaps next week we'll talk about that then. And what I hope, this is obviously, because my first thought when they'd announced that they'd given permission for this was that, you know, Client Earth would just sort it out. But this is a mine and not a power station. Does that mean the sort of the thing they used in Poland as a sort of, this is not sound financial planning for the investors, is that less valid?
No, but they will probably focus on whether it is enables legal compliance with the UK's net zero strategy, because that's where the kind of the judicial leverage is, and that's where other things can be challenged. You know, that's what Client Earth does, is like saying, this is what you've set in train in terms of the law, and this is how you're effectively breaking that law. You know, so Client Earth, you know, successfully proved that the UK's net zero strategy was unlawful because it wouldn't deliver the savings on the timescales required, and the government didn't appeal that. They basically sort of shrugged their shoulders and went, yeah, we know.
Yeah, which is good, because now they have to legally come back with a decent net zero strategy. Yeah. But that will affect all of us, because that will affect every business in the country, which is good. But it's going to be, this transition is not going to be easy. It's going to be traumatic for lots of people.
Do you want to talk more about carbon capture, or do you want to talk about my hair, or do you want to talk about something else?
Your hair.
Okay, we've had a question in from...
Your barber?
No, sadly not. He knows the truth. I was there yesterday, sadly. It's just when he glosses over a whole area. It's sort of like being asked to do someone's garden, but half of it's paved.
Yeah. Oh, don't need to cut this bit anymore, John.
Yeah, you probably don't need a lawnmower anymore. I think a pair of scissors will probably do. It is Dan who says, how long before John is completely bald?
What, is this going to have a sweepstake?
Yeah. Well, he's asked some serious questions about human rights and political correctness. His first question is, how important can we allow social media to be? We've already seen what's happened recently with Elon buying the most expensive toy in the world and the impact it has on millions of people's lives and jobs. Is this something we will have to police more heavily in the future?
Well, there is an online harms bill going through at the moment, isn't there? So, yes, we are going to have to police it much more. And I think that's inevitable. That the problem has been that, you know, when it comes to broadcasting, we have very clear rules about broadcasting and some system of accountability there. And the social media companies have kind of got away by saying, well, we're not really broadcasters at all. And actually, they kind of are. But actually, beyond that, if you start trying to legislate them as broadcasters, you get into all sorts of problems as well. What they really are mining companies. They digitally extract stuff from us and then put it out there and make a profit from it. And therefore, they should be legislated as if you're going to extract stuff from our population and then sell it back to us, then you need to have a kind of a digital mining license in the way that you would have to have a license for mining, you know, a quarry or whatever. So we're going to get to that realization quite soon, and they're not going to like it. But, you know, fuck them, because they're hugely corrosive, and they know that they are getting away with it. And
have either of you made? Sorry, go on.
Carry on. No, you interrupt me. That's what happens on social media, isn't it? Like, I'm halfway through a point, and then somebody goes, "No, but hang on, what about me?" So yeah,
it was the point at which you said they know what they're doing is wrong. I just assumed you were going to say, "And I'm fucking sick of it."
and I'm fucking sick of it.
We could just cut and paste that from earlier on. Have either of you made the switch away from Twitter? It was all that everyone was moving to Mastodon. I remember that we discussed We Are 8 in a previous podcast as more sort of progressive social media content providers.
Yeah, kind of. Although, I mean, their whole model is on getting people to watch ads. And actually, yes. If you look at the updates you get from them, which, you know, I got some shares in them, all the updates are like, look how many people we've managed to, you know, get to engage with ads. And it's kind of like, yes, you're not going to solve the problems of social media by selling to people more efficiently. We need to be stopped. We need to not sell.
Exactly. It's just mining, as Mark said, it's mining our attention, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, everything they do is about keeping you online and scrolling and ogling as long as possible, which is not fulfilling. In fact, it's constantly about keeping your appetite going.
Indeed. I think we are much better than many others. I think they are still trying to solve the problem from within the model of what already exists rather than rethink the model. And they believe that the way you move advertisers' money around is the way you solve climate change. And I think a lot of people would have a problem with that.
So we're gearing towards the end now. It's usually where I find something positive to end on. But sometimes it's nice to just embrace that everything feels a bit shit sometimes. So while I was just broadly slagging people off, an email comes in from J&P Wallace, who came to see me in Buxton on my Nitwit tour. Thank you for the shits and giggles. I'm trying to cut the shits out, to be honest, but, you know, that's the consequence of the vegan diet. There was one thing we saw after this. I have to say this email as well absolutely scared the shit out of me. The way, you know, when you're reading a sentence and you've got no idea where it's going to end. I have a small thing to ask, John. That's already, oh God, here we go. My husband and I came to see you at Buxton. Oh Christ. There was one thing we saw
after
the show.
Why a Christ for Buxton? Was it a particularly bad show?
Coming to see me live? No, just in general. I'm all for people emailing me abuse that's sort of vague and non-specific on social media, but there's nothing like, I have come to see you live and here is a specific complaint about your work.
Do you have overwhelming memories of the Buxton gig?
I do, because that's the one my mother was at, my mother and sister. So it was probably slightly shorter than the other shows because there would have been some jokes I did not tell.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
So you do edit. You do edit for family sensitivities.
Oh, absolutely. Hall is about 27 minutes on each tour because I found any of the looser materials.
It's a slightly shorter show tonight.
Absolutely.
So my wife is in.
It's not her. She knows all about it. But it's her granddad often comes, and her mum and her auntie, and you know, people who will physically attack me. It's all just psychological in a marriage, isn't it? There was one thing we saw after the show had concluded that we did take note of and which brought a downer to the evening. Oh, God.
Where's
what have
going?
I done? I saw you getting into your helicopter after the gig. We wondered if you'd seen this as well. Are you such a fun, relatable and earnest advocate for environmental issues amongst other issues on the podcast in your daily life? Did it not depress the shit out of you to peep through the curtain after the show and see nothing but a FK load of litter scattered and left on the floor by the audience. It did for both my husband and I on our way out of the venue. We took our rubbish with us like good boys and girls. We were aware that there are staff, mainly volunteers, there to pick it up at the end of the evening, but were wondering if you could give folks a last prompt at close of play not to be complete and utter entitled shit and take their rubbish with them, dispose of it properly when they leave. Thanks for reading this email. Apologies for being those people, fans and listeners, J and P Wallace.
Oh, John, is this the quality of your audience? These are my people. They leave their shit everywhere.
You sort of can't win. You either admit that you've seen it and you didn't do anything about it, or you say, to be honest, the minute I say goodnight, the car engine starts and I'm out the fucking back door and I don't give a shit about what happens in the theatre the minute I finish. So no, I didn't see it, but it does bother me.
You should see the mess left after a prog gig. Yeah.
Do you know what? The prog audience is that they're the sweetest, kindest, most attentive. You know, there's never any trouble at a prog gig. Everybody's very polite. You know, it's
trouble
it's
at
like
a prog gig. That sounds like a novel.
Never happens. Literally never happens.
It is nice to get an email from someone who's been to your gig and that it's signed J and P Wallace. That's a level of formality that I don't imagine you get. That sort of prog-like response.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a discerning audience.
Dear sir.
Would you ever consider, like, you know, I mean, it's not exactly a big kind of finale, is it? But say,
no, well, that's the problem.
Yeah, you can't, like, and a last bit of eco-hectoring at the end of the show.
You could make a gag out of that, though, you know, in the show. Say, I've received this email, you know, don't be like Matlock, you cunts.
Okay. Well, we switched from F-bombs to C-bombs. So that's probably a sign it's time to wrap it up, I think, for this week. If you happen to live in Scunthorpe and you know the marketing campaign for that city, then I suggest Mark can probably help you if it needs a tweak. We'll be back next week. So how's about this? Because this has been, I tell you what, even though it's been broadly bleak in its content, we've laughed a lot. And that, I would say, is key to the question that comes in every week is how do you cope and are things just getting worse? And we had a question this week, what's the alternative to democracy? Because everyone's an arsehole. Broadly, what I'd say you can do in the short term is continue to subscribe to this and other podcasts and at least feel part of a community of like-minded people, because sometimes it feels like everyone is an arsehole. And then you've only got to chat to a couple of like-minded people like yourselves for an hour and it makes you feel better. Because at least you can laugh about the impending demise of everything. So we'll be back next week. And I'm going to make an effort to be, I'm only going to be positive next week. I'm going to talk about possible solutions. And I hate all that, but I'm going to make sure that next week's podcast is our most positive to date.
Oh my God, it's going to be so unfunny.
It's going to be unbearable. I'm going to have to drink a lot.
Yeah, you're going to be like a kind of daytime American TV presenter with sort of pearly white bleached teeth going,
absolutely.
Hi, it's John with this week's positive news.
Do you know what I'm writing now? I'm going to pin it to my notice board. I'm writing, it is series 4, episode 5, so that I even start by getting the facts right. There we go. Oh, so that's going on my notice board.
It's a slippery slope.
There we go. So if you have any questions for next week that you want me to, if you want me to put a positive spin on anything, then email those in. Keep in touch via social media. Here's how you can do it. You can reach us by email, hello@johnandthefuturenauts.com. That's hello@johnandthefuturenauts.com. We have our own show Twitter account, which is @JandTheF. And of course, you can reach us individually on Twitter too. I am @RonRichardson, John Richardson with the first letter swapped around. That's what I've done there. And you can reach Ed and Mark at the following.
I'm Ed Gillespie @FruCool, which is @FRUCOOL.
And I'm Mark Stevenson, and you can find me @OptimistOnTour.
And let's hope for a better week, not just for the planet, but let's be slightly self-indulgent this week and say a better week for the health of our individual contributors and their families. Ed and Mark, thank you so much for your time in difficult circumstances. On behalf of the listeners, I know it makes them feel better. It makes me feel better too. Stay well, and we'll see you next week.
Lots of love.
Yeah. Thanks, John.